Welcome, everyone. I guess we could call today Dog Day Afternoon. We have three bills on the schedule today, all pertaining to various aspects of animal protection and abuse. We're going to start with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 641 and Senate Bill 844 together. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 641 would create the misdemeanor crime of owning or possessing dog paraphernalia with the intent that it be used to train a dog as a fighting dog or that it be used in furtherance of a dog fight. It would make it a Class A misdemeanor. Senate Bill 844 is a bill that would increase the penalty for a dog keeper who maintains a public nuisance by keeping dogs that bite individuals. There are many provisions under this bill. It would include the court ability to grant an order to kill a dog that chases or menaces a person. It would require county animal control to establish a registry for dog breeders and would require breeders of pit bull or pit bull mixes to register. And it would create a fine system for failure to register for those specific breeds of dogs. And it would also make a dog keeper strictly liable for any economic damages incurred by a person physically injured by a dog.
Thank you, Council. Both of these bills are sponsored by Senator Ryan Deckert, who is, we are honored to have him with us today. So, Senator Deckert, would you like to come and open the testimony and anyone you want to bring up?
If you would order Susie from my office to join me, she doesn't want to.
Okay, we will issue a subpoena. Senator Kozanski will deliver it immediately. Would you please join Senator Deckert? Thank you very much.
That sounds like a staffing issue.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Ryan Deckert, Senate District 14, which is Beaverton, Alloa, and Southwest Portland, and just a little bit with Senator Starr of Hillsboro, but just a tiny bit. And the first bill that I'm going to testify on, actually the words Alloa are really critical to, because it's Senate Bill 844. And Kathleen Eimel, who is a true, and we use this term, or you hear the term hero around here, and she was to be with me today and had a personal emergency and would like to come back and talk to this committee in a week or two when her situation improves. But she, as I said, is one that fits the bill when you throw around the term hero. She witnessed, it was about a year ago, last July, so less than a year ago, she saw a 7-year-old being attacked in Alloa, and the 7-year-old was near death. It was being attacked. It had a pit bull on top of him, and Kathleen was driving by. It was early in the morning. She was driving by, and she stopped her car, and she threw herself on top of the child. She saved that child's life, and she's won many awards, appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show. But it was that act of heroism that really brought this issue to my attention, because it was really a citizen that went, just risked her life to save that young boy, and deserves all the applause and acclamation that she justly has received. And I know that she wanted to be with this committee today and had something come up this morning and let us know, but would like to be here in a week to 10 days. But that issue is what actually brought Senate Bill 844, Madam Chair, to your committee, because it was in that incident that we found out, and Washington County was the prosecutorial body that prosecuted the case, that it was difficult to prosecute these cases, and that pit bull was not the first attack that it had on another animal or a human, and that some of our laws around the owners of the animals, and that's the spirit of Senate Bill 844, really goes after a dangerous, vicious dogs who have a pattern of repeating this behavior. We do talk about, and you'll see in the legislation, wording that talks about the breeds, because it is my feeling, and you'll hear some testimony following me that counters this, but I feel there are certain breeds that we ought to watch more closely. And we certainly don't want to go where Miami, Florida has gone and other jurisdictions of just banning certain breeds. But I think the idea of a registry, which is included in the bill, so that we can know who are breeding these particular breeds, and I'll use the word pit bull because that's one that is comes up over and over and over again in these animal attacks. What we found is that there are certain folks, most of the breeders and the owners are the responsible citizens, but you have a few that are breeding dangerous animals for, and that touches on the next bill, dogfighting and other more dangerous type of activity. And I think we as a state want to do a couple of things. First is we want to ensure that the statutes and the first goal of this bill, 844, is just to get some uniformity across the state, because what we know is that in some counties they have very organized, well thought out programs in terms of dangerous dogs and vicious attacks, and then other counties have nothing. And so in working with and doing the research on this bill, I think the first goal that we would bring to you is just getting some level of uniformity on our dangerous dog statutes across the state. The second goal would be to increase the penalty for a dog keeper whose dog has a first-time offense to an unclassified misdemeanor. We think that that crime fits, that punishment fits the crime, but it also keeps in the spirit of this is a dog that it's just the first time. But I think that's something that we ought to take note of, because what we're finding over and over, and you will see testimony to this fact, is that it's the same dogs that we see over and over and over again, and once they've attacked once, like the case of recently in Oregon City where a horse was killed, is that you seem to find the dogs had done it over and over, and this was a pattern with certain dogs and their owners. The second goal, Madam Chair, would be a repeat offense for a problem dog would constitute a Class A misdemeanor, which has a maximum punishment, of course, of 1 year imprisonment and a fine of $6,250. The third goal of Senate Bill 844 is to make punishment for a dog bite offenses applicable throughout the state, and so just to give uniformity of the laws throughout the state. The fourth is what I spoke about, which is requiring some registry of dog breeders so that we can track those folks who are engaging in this business and know who they are and be able to track, go back to them if their dogs are the ones that are we find, whether it's the case in like Oswego, the case in Lower, or Oregon City, or throughout the state. And then lastly, Madam Chair, on Senate Bill 844, it makes a dog owner strictly liable for economic damages incurred by a dog attack victim. Currently, the law states that a victim must prove negligence by the owner, which requires one to prove additionally that the owner knew their dog was a danger to society. Strict liability holds owners more accountable because the victim is only to require and prove the owner did not take proper preventative action to avoid their dog from attacking. Madam Chair, that is Senate Bill 844. We thank you for allowing us to bring this bill to your committee. And what I'd like to request, because we've met with several of the folks seated right behind me who have indicated general support for the concept, but would like to see some fine-tuning, and we'd like to work with some of those interested parties and bring this bill back to you in a week or 2 weeks with Ms. Eimel, frankly, to talk about her experience.
Thank you. If you would please tell Ms. Eimel that we wish her the best, and we're sorry she wasn't able to make it today, and we would love to hear from her at a future time. This shows a lot of work so far, and I appreciate your willingness to work with others to fine-tune it so that we can get a good product out. So I appreciate it. After we do the hearing today, we will we will grant your request to work on this further and bring it back. Thank you. Senator Whitsitt, you have a
question. Senator Baker, thank you for your testimony. Why do you believe that this should be identified as a statewide problem as opposed to a local issue where local customs and practices are different?
Madam Chair, Senator West, that is an excellent question. I think the status quo that we have today is somewhat reflective, but I guess the response that I would have is that, and you may hear from some district attorneys who and folks that work in this arena, that I believe, A, there's a state interest at stake here, because you have folks, obviously, that are within different counties in the state that are encountering the problem. And I think this is one where a solution, whether it's the penalties that are imposed, which is obviously we deal with at the state level in terms of assigning penalties for crimes, but also the other language that you see in terms of registry and others, I think it rises to the level of a statewide concern, because I think the evidence that we've seen, and it's anecdotal, but you'll hear the statistics also, indicates that there's enough of a problem around the state that would determine that this is something that the state has an interest in strengthening the penalties to ensure that, and that's my big thing, Madam Chair, is that the owners of these really dangerous, vicious dogs that attack and attack and attack, the centerpiece of this legislation is that those folks should be held liable for their dogs who are a menace on children and other animals throughout the community. And ultimately, if the state does not act, I think you'll see a continuation of what you see today, which is cases that aren't prosecuted. The next bill we'll talk about is Senate Bill 641, where you had Quintel Woods, which is a famous case of a Portland trailblazer who was obviously involved in dogfighting, which is not an activity that I think we as a society would feel very, or would, I think we would frown upon that activity. But they were not able to prosecute because I think some weaknesses that we have in state law.
I think we should keep these two issues separate, actually, between dog fighting and private dogs. Another question, why pit bulls and not Rottweilers and Dobermans and German Shepherds and other dogs that are noted for biting?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt. We are open to that. I think the original, we've been kind of recircling this and recircling and meeting with a lot of the interested parties. We're trying to get the data in Multnomah County. We met with them, who has at least an extensive, because of the population in that county, animal control activity. I believe gave us a list of four or five breeds of dogs that, and the incidences of those four or five, and I would find myself receptive to an amendment that would do that. Although you will hear in about 5 or 10 minutes resistance, at least from some folks, of singling out breeds. And I just think the data is strong enough and evident enough that it's certain breeds that come up over and over, pit bulls obviously being the one that seems to be just and is at the top of the list in terms of statistically.
Well, I certainly concur with Senator Whitsitt's suggestion of a Rottweiler. Two reasons. One is if it had been more than a 1% grade, I may not be here today, having been chased for almost a mile on my bike with my daughter by a Rottweiler. I don't think a pit bull could have run that fast. And I certainly achieved new levels of training that day from getting away from that dog. And I would also encourage you to speak with the insurance industry, because I've learned that they will not, many of them will not write insurance for people who have a Rottweiler or a Pit Bull. Those were the two breeds that the insurance people told me, they won't write insurance because they're deemed so dangerous. So you might want to expand your scope. I didn't see insurance people signed up here, but you might want to expand your scope to them. Senator Whitsitt, did you have another follow-up?
Yes, Chair Burdick, Senator Deckard. I really do have a problem with the first bite rule that you have, not in the liability at all. If you have a dog that bites someone, you should be responsible for the damage that they cause. But to fine them for a first bite really is pretty unpredictable. And also, the first bite can also be a person can do things to a dog that might precipitate a first bite. But it's that first bite is in the mind of the dog, not in the mind of the owner. And so I really have a problem with that. As a veterinarian, I've been bitten more times than you would care to sew me up. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a vicious dog, Sometimes it's a dog that misunderstands. Sometimes it's a dog that doesn't understand why you just stuck a needle in their backside. There's a lot of different reasons. And to create a fine for that first thing that is a decision on the dog's part, once the dog has made the decision to bite someone, then the owner, I believe, should be held liable for if it happens again.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a question. That's a soliloquy.
And Madam Chair, Senator Witt said, I would really welcome, because this really is, we spent, and it's mainly Susie, not myself, spent a decent amount of time just talking to different areas, whether it's the district attorneys, but I would welcome, if we do a work group, I guess, to cut to the chase, is really your wisdom and your experience, because I think veterinarians have a unique insight into this arena and animal behavior. And if I don't want to do the chair's job, but if you'd be willing, what we've decided we would do is we'd have our hearing today, and at the consent of the chair, we would come back to you in about a week or 10 days with making some amendments to this to ensure that some of the concerns that you might hear, I think, are legitimate ones. I think that's a legitimate one, and so we would like to craft an amendment to this bill and invite you into that process if you're willing.
You'd be willing to do that, Senator Whitsitt? Great. That we're very fortunate to have a veterinarian on judiciary to deal with some of these issues. So appreciate your willingness to participate. Are there other questions? Senator Pisanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my thoughts, Ryan, on this is that I've looked at the issues. I think Senator Whitsitt brought it up as to the first bite rule. But it also, when you look at it, it basically makes the individual owner decide at that point whether or not they're going to put the dog down or keep the dog and risk whatever. And, I mean, that's something I guess I really ask you to think about. I mean, is the goal to put the dog down because it's bit once? If it is, then that's what it should say. Because I think you're putting the individual in a situation that, and I think Senator Whitsitt may be able to give us some more guidance in this area, but it doesn't mean that the dog's going to continue to bite. If the individual takes corrective means of trying to rehabilitate the dog from doing that again or take some steps, I just think that's something that we want to take in consideration. I was concerned, but I think it's just how the drafting is about the separate episode of being a previous conviction, but it looks like they interlock it with the next subsections saying the previous conviction has to be to whatever, because nuisance covers more than just a dog bite. As you probably know, if you look at the statute, there's a lot of public nuisance. But it just seems to me that this type of regiment, you're basically setting up a decision for that pet owner to say, it's bet someone next time I'm going to be liable, and the alternative I have is put the dog down.
Mm-hmm.
Or take it out somewhere else to potentially be another risk for someone else. Lastly, the only thing I would say is that if you're wanting to go forward on this registration, I would tell you what you have is a fine not to exceed $50 is the cost of doing business. There's no reason for anyone to register if all it's going to cost them is $50 to not have to register.
Hmm. Yeah, and that will be at the discretion of this committee, if because you'll hear debate both ways. I've landed on, I think it's better to have a registry of dog breeders, because I think it's, as a society, we want to track these folks. But what the fine is for not complying, and I feel very open to. And just on the first point that both Senator Whitsitt and yourself mentioned, the goal is obviously to talk to these owners about the conduct of their dogs. And how we get there, I'm open to. But I do think it's a very legitimate state issue of how folks are governing their dogs and raising their dogs, and a few cases which we hear too much about is they're not doing it in a manner that protects society.
Senator, are you done?
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Whitsitt, did you have another question?
Senator Deckard, Senator Pozaski just brought up an interesting thought. So is the liability risk transferable between owners? If you have a dog and he's bitten someone and you give that dog to someone else, either that person may know or may not know the dog has bitten someone, and then the dog bites a second person, where does the liability fall? Is it on both of them, on the new owner? Where does that go?
That is a, Madam Chair, that's a darn good question that I'm not going to take a swing at. I'll look at your committee administrator if he wants to.
I'll take a swing. Why not? I think the way the draft is written is that the fine applies to the keeper of the dog. So I think it would be the keeper of the dog who would have the prior violation. It could be interpreted that if the keeper has a new dog, that maybe that would count as a second.
So if the keeper has a new dog that's already been sanctioned once, meaning the dog is a biter.
No, I mean that it sounds to me, in reading it only once and not being familiar with this area of the law prior to yesterday, I think that it could inure to the keeper. So I don't think it transfers, the dog ownership transfers then to the new owner. I think that if the same keeper who has a violation with dog A then has a violation with dog B, then that may count as the second violation of that keeper.
And that wasn't the question, but that's a good question.
Well, I think counsel's right, because this is the keeper has the previous conviction, so it goes to the keeper in a separate episode of maintaining a public nuisance. It doesn't say that public nuisance has to be the same dog.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, and it needs to be cleared up, because I think that's the intent, is to have it be tied to the same dog biting more than once. Okay. Good catch, Senator Whitsitt. Any more questions? From you, the veterinarian? No more vet questions? Okay. Any more questions? Thank you very much. And did you want to move on to the next bill?
Yes, Senate Bill 641.
Thank you.
And correctly noted, these are two very separate pieces of legislation which I would ask be considered separately. So, Madam Chair, Senate Bill 641 is related to dog fighting, and the difficulty that I have found in prosecuting these cases. And one does not have to talk too much about the kind of folks that would be involved in these dog fighting. The amount of activity or dog fights that are occurring is surprising. But what we have found is that too often to prosecute a dog fighting, when a law enforcement, and I believe one of the folks that was involved in the investigation of Quintel Woods is here and can talk about the difficulties they had in prosecuting that case, is that you have to too often find witnesses. And you can imagine why it's difficult to find those are the folks that are going to ultimately testify against the promoters of the dog fight, and the owners of the dogs are having to find the witnesses. It's just very, very difficult for a number of reasons. One is these are not the kind of folks that you'd find at the JCs. They're not people that a prosecutor might want to turn to, because they enjoy the activity of dogfighting and wagering and all the other illegal activity that we find around this enterprise. And so what we've laid out for you in Senate Bill 641 is some other tools that prosecutors might be able to employ when they come across an event or a dogfight, and that is the paraphernalia that is associated with and making it illegal to have that. And this would just be an extra tool that would be in the toolbox of folks when they come across one of these incidences, to be able to find the paraphernalia and then have grounds to start at least a prosecution of these individuals who are participating and owning and promoting the event.
Thank you very much. Questions in the committee? Thank you very much for coming. At this time, I'm going to close the public hearing on both bills and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 844 so that we will consider these one at a time. And our first witness on 844, you may want to come up together. Sharon Harmon and Kelly Peterson, you want to come up together from the Humane Society? Kelly here? Yeah, there she is.
Sorry.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I'm Sharon Harmon, and I'm the director of the Oregon Humane Society. And if you'll indulge me in about 30 seconds, I'd like to clarify that we are unrelated to any other animal welfare group in the state or in the country, in the city, in the county. We are a standalone humane organization, as most humane societies are. While we may agree with other organizations on some issues, we are still distinct organizations. With regard to Senate Bill 844, I share some of the committee's expression that dogs do bite. Dogs do bite. I mean, if all of us have dogs, I bet if we ask them to show, give us a show of hands, and they were truly honest, because after all, the television cameras are here, they would, you would find that most people have had dogs that have bitten, whether it's intentionally going for a tennis ball, or it's, here's the postman, on my lucky day, I got a hold of his leg. Dogs do bite. How do you sort out from the dogs that are intentional, from the dogs who do no damage, who are unintentional and do no damage, or are intentionally trying to bite someone and still do no damage? I think for most of us, being bitten by a large breed dog, such as those mentioned before, is a terrifying experience. Those of us bitten by a Chihuahua or a Yorkie, it could be more of a humorous experience. No damage done, ha-ha, I got bit by a Chihuahua. How will this bill sort out between bites that are intentional, bites that are harmful, bites that are truly vicious and do damage? Dogs do bite. It's their nature. We appreciate Senate Bill 844's attempt to protect the community from dangerous dogs and should place a heavier burden on owners. Too often we've relied on the strategy of let's kill the dog and the problem solved, when the issue is the owner gets another dog and the same problem happens. We need to shift that burden to the owner. But I'm also cognizant of the situation that, you know, we call dog wandering. You know, our shelters in Portland, Oregon, Mike Oswald from Multnomah County Animal Control is here, and we're concerned that his organization will classify a dog as a dangerous dog, and there's a lot of restrictions that come with that, and those dogs will be surrendered to the Oregon Humane Society, and we have no way of knowing what's the background of this dog. To me, that's a loaded gun in our shelter. I also would like to see the bill, if it goes forward, to include provisions that provide for rehoming or placement of these animals. Placement could be in a sanctuary. Rehoming could be in an experienced person. I think the record needs to follow the dog as well as the owner. We need to know. We're in the business of buying homes for animals, and a temperament test is not going to disclose the incident with the two-year-old, or chasing the bicycle and terrifying someone, or biting someone, if no one tells us. An element of any registry and any program to identify dangerous animals needs to include permanent identification. And the only permanent identification with any reliability that we have is a microchip. We would like to see any registry include a FACAVA standard microchip that is, you know, uniform, readability, and is unencrypted. Unencrypted is a key point. With regards to breed-specific regulation, I think we have to part our ways here in support of this bill. Pit bulls are identified as American Staffordshire Terriers and Staffordshire Bull Terriers and American Pit Bull Terriers. What is a pit bull? I think I could look at a dog and say it's a pit bull, but someone else could look at it or tell you it's a boxer mix. Like, there's an old joke of how do you turn a pit bull into a boxer as you bring him to an animal shelter. You know, we change the name on it. Not that the Oregon Humane Society does that, but it's true. We want to save animals' lives, and if we ban pit bulls, they will become something else. Two municipalities have tried that. San Francisco wanted to call them San Francisco Terriers. New York, for 2 days, called them New Yorkies until, you know, calmer heads prevailed. But you cannot define a pit bull. You can, for those people who are foolish enough to put an ad for puppies for sale, but there are thousands of dogs produced, sold, transferred that have no, you know, there's no record of them that would escape this notification. I agree with you that pit bulls are a rising concern. We see more and more of them. They're hard to kennel, and they're harder to place. What are we left with? You know, I really do view them as loaded guns in a shelter. I have no history on them, and the people that want them are not the people I want to adopt them to. We would rather offer up that the state create a subsidized program to provide for spaying and neutering of pit bulls and any other large breed or nasty dog deemed dangerous, and we include Jack Russell Terriers in there for all that matters, but create a way to get these animals off the street and out of the reproductive pool. You know, then you can include dogs that have a serious history. Corsos, Bula Brasileiros, Tibetan Mastiffs, these are lethal dogs. These are the dogs that killed a woman in San Francisco. These are truly dangerous dogs, and this won't address it. We would rather see the state put its efforts to prevention, because this is just, it's going to get sticky trying to enforce this. We applaud the authors of this bill to try and come up with a series of regulations that helps protect citizens. It is long overdue that we address these problems. We're just not following along that breed specific to pit bulls, and people will call them pit bulls. We'll do that job. Thank you.
How do you feel about the narrow subject of liability, going to a strict liability standard for the owners?
I agree that owners need to be more held responsible. Too often, these animals aren't addressed. There's a patchwork of regulations and ordinances statewide. Every community does it different, and all you have to do is move across the county line, and it doesn't apply. It's still a bad dog. It's still a worse owner, and it won't apply with a scattered jurisdiction. I think you need to look. I think to be responsible, we need to look at categorization of what a bite is. Is it the neighbor and he was holding a tennis ball and he didn't let go of it quick enough for that border collie and got his thumb bit, or is it the situation where the dog leaps over the fence and attacks the kids? I think there has to be some intellect applied to it that is going to make it harder to do, but I think just knowing dogs and people in the 24 years I've worked in shelters, it needs to be done to make it cohesive.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other questions from the committee? Thank you. Kelly. And thank you for clarifying the difference between the Oregon and the national. I thought I knew everything there was to know about the Humane Society, and that was news to me. So welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick and committee members, my name is Kelly Peterson, and I am with the Humane Society of the United States, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 844, and we'd also like to extend our gratitude to Senator Ryan Deckert for bringing this issue before the legislature. It truly is very important, and the Humane Society of the United States does believe it's important to address the issues of dangerous dogs, but we want to be careful that we just don't focus on one breed alone, because dangerous dogs can come in any breed, really, just depending on the conditions and the factors. And rather, you know, if we only focus on a specific breed, we really do neglect the larger problems of abuse and aggression training and irresponsible dog ownership. So, you know, we feel that comprehensive dog bite legislation coupled with better education and stricter enforceable regulations would go very far in protecting Oregon communities. So, again, we're happy to be here, and we'd love to be part of the process and working through this bill. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Next, we will have we'll have Marcia Keith and Laura Ireland Moore come up. Laura is not signed up as an opponent or opposition, so I may be. Are you supporting this bill?
I am in part.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Okay. Thanks. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marcia Keith, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association to support the major concept of Senate Bill 844. As others have pointed out, we are in support of bringing attention to this problem of owners of vicious dogs. We share the shock and the sympathy felt by citizens of Oregon when attacks such as the one in Aloha occur, such as the attack on the horse, and it's because of sharing that shock and sympathy that we support the increased penalties for keepers of vicious dogs that bite persons. We understand the necessity to convince owners that those animals must be controlled, and increased penalties seem to be at least an appropriate way to make that emphasis, to emphasize that necessity. Our problem with the bill is the same as other people have mentioned. We cannot support the bill in its entirety as long as it contains the breed-specific provision, the registration for a specific breed of dog. The Oregon Veterinary Medical Association has taken the position that it is not the breed of the animal that determines its tendency to be vicious. In fact, other dogs other than the breed that's mentioned in this bill have been mentioned, long lists of them. And as an example, a past president of our association recalls being driven to the top of an examining table by a Cocker Spaniel. So the breed-specific language needs to be eliminated from the bill before we can offer our full support. We understand that there's a work group being formulated, and we would love to be part of that work group. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'm sure you'll be welcome in the work group. Are there questions? Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Burdick, Ms. Keith, would you consider a feral wolf a vicious animal?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Would you consider a feral wolf a vicious animal?
Having had absolutely no experience of feral wolves, other than hearsay, I would probably consider it a vicious animal by hearsay. I've never had any immediate experience with a feral wolf.
Yes, the point is there are also domesticated wolves that are reported to be quite gentle animals.
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, yes, I understand that.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Laura Ireland Moore, and I'm an animal law attorney in Portland, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts with you on this bill. As an attorney who deals with animal law cases, we both plaintiff and defend animal bite cases, we have not had any that have involved a pit bull. Golden retrievers and boxers and a variety of other animals, but mostly at this time reiterating what others have shared with you is that I don't think just focusing on pit bulls is going to get to the root of the problem. And it does, you know, we do see a lot of cases with larger animals that do create more damage, and they certainly get more media attention. But we certainly see a lot of cases with other bites that, you know, are just kind of on a smaller scale that we still deal with. And I think I agree with the strict liability portion of the bill. I think it's an important aspect of the bill. But I also think there needs to be some room to consider reasons why animals bite. And certainly in, you know, defending dog bite cases, there are, you know, children poking, you know, the dogs in the eyes or, you know, the dogs being provoked. And I think there are reasons, you know, we need to be able to not have such, there needs to be room for some reasons to consider those reasons why they bite as well.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, I think we have three animal control people here. I'm just guessing, but we have Karen Harold from Washington County, Mary Strom from Yamhill County, and Mike Oswald from Multnomah County here. And so I'm going to invite you all up. Maybe you're not animal control.
No, Mary and I are not animal control.
Okay, so I will invite Mike Oswald up then. And then you'll be next. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm Stephanie Soden, representing Multnomah County. And with me today, I have Mike Oswald. He's our Animal Services Director and has worked with the bill's sponsor and has some points to share with you today.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, and Mike Oswald from Multnomah County. I would like to just first say that we strongly support the intentions to reduce the incidences of dog bites in Oregon. I think that's what Senator Deckard is bringing forward here is an important issue. I have had a chance to meet with him and his staff to bring up some issues, but also talk briefly about the program that exists in Multnomah County, which has been in effect since 1986, when Multnomah County elected officials had to address the whole issue of potentially dangerous dogs, a child was killed, and so what is the appropriate response? There's discussion at that time about breed-specific laws, and what after a committee worked on that for a number of months concluded that the best way to proceed is to identify dogs, regardless of what breed they are, based upon the incidents that occur and the circumstances surrounding those, and impose regulations on the owners themselves. And the express goal of that is to prevent anything from repeating in the future. That particular program creates a potentially dangerous dog program where it recognizes those bite circumstances which may not have been, you know, aggressive or aggravated to the most serious cases where animals seriously injure someone. And then imposes restrictions and conditions on the continued ownership. And those restrictions can be commensurate with the severity of the incident itself. So there may be secure enclosures, there may be muzzling requirements when it's off the property. It may include an owner cannot keep a dog any further in that jurisdiction for up to 3 years. It can include destruction on aggravated cases. But the intent of it is to recognize that there is a wide variation of circumstances surrounding dog bites. There's also many breeds that have been involved in very serious attacks. And in fact, back in the early 90s, we did a program evaluation of the potentially dangerous dog program and identified which are the highest frequency occurring dog attacks, which breeds those are, and also looking at recidivism, if you will, of future events. Because, again, the intent of imposing a restriction like a secure enclosure and signs warning people that a dog's in there has bitten someone can lead to prevention of a future incident from occurring. And one of the things we've also found is that our records have revealed that dogs that have caused serious injury have also demonstrated frequently exhibited behavioral characteristics prior to that event. You heard some testimony here today that it wasn't the first incident that led to a very serious attack. In fact, the intent of identifying animals and imposing restrictions on the owners at a very early stage ideally could prevent anything from seriously happening in the future. Well, so there's this whole graded series of levels of potentially dangerousness that we're thinking that, and from the data that we've seen since 1986, has helped to reduce the number of repeating incidents. And also, I think the other thing that's interesting and important in this from a state perspective is the creation of a uniform state law that would address the keeping of potentially dangerous dogs. That could, in fact, address effectively animals and their owners moving from jurisdiction to jurisdiction within the state. The classification actually is an identification of the dog and its owner, which follows the dog even to change his hands. These dogs are already microchipped. We track them on where they go, and those restrictions only apply within our jurisdiction because there's nothing in the state, and so they could move to another jurisdiction and then that information wouldn't be available. So I think that it could really enhance public safety and the safety of other animals, which is an issue on the rise of aggressive dogs actually injuring and killing other dogs, other animals in the community. So it's a protection of both people and animals in the community that we're talking about here. And we have data for over a decade of this program, and it can be complex, but it is very specific to circumstances surrounding the attacks or the incidents themselves, and coming up with what would be a reasonable and commensurate restrictions placed on continued ownership in some cases, and in other cases to prohibit ownership in the future. We've also heard from Senator Deckard and from the committee that there's interest in a work group, and we'd be glad to participate and offer any data or information that we've experienced in Multnomah County.
Thank you. I see your name being written down as you speak. So thank you.
Okay.
Are there questions from the committee? Senator Witzig?
Senator Burdick, sir, this bill addresses human bite wounds. And does your testimony suggest that you believe that this should be extended to bite wounds on animals also?
Chair Burdick, Senator, what's that? The current statute on public nuisance addresses attacks on and bites on people, but it also addresses issues of dogs that are attacking or injuring livestock. The potentially dangerous dog ordinance in Multnomah County also addresses animals. So, for example, a situation just happened 2 weeks ago of the dog owner walking a dog on a leash and the dog attacks and injures the dog that's being walked while the other dog is loose. And then it was like the third occurrence of that situation. And in this particular occurrence, the dog that was attacked was injured and had veterinary care at a fairly significant cost to the dog owner. And they're walking their dog on a leash, and the other one is loose and causing injury. And we're seeing more of those kinds of incidences as the numbers of larger breed dogs and dogs that have some characteristics that are maybe more aggressive that are causing those kinds of injuries. And so In Multnomah County, the ordinance does address whether it's injuring a person or chasing and injuring other animals or kills another animal. All of those are in the various levels of potentially dangerousness, and the restrictions are different depending on what level it is. Does that answer your question?
Not exactly. I understand that the dog control laws are generally tailored to the neighborhood in which you're in. But the question was that this bill, as I understand the way it's written, is restricted to the bite wound of a human. And I'm asking if you would, but through your testimony, are you suggesting that you think this should be expanded to include bite wounds of animals?
I think that it would be an improvement to include animals, dogs that are attacking other animals and injuring and killing other animals, because those are behaviors that sometimes are directed towards other animals only, but it also there are circumstances when a history of a particular dog and dog owner includes a whole series of incidents that have occurred that include menacing people, menacing other animals, maybe injuring another dog, maybe biting someone, and it's focusing on the actual behavioral characteristics of the particular dog and the ownership of it.
Well, and you raise a good point, Senator. I honestly can't remember whether this is a statewide statute or whether this was specific to the Central Oregon area, but there are ordinances and laws on the book protecting livestock from animals that chase. And there's actually, it's a capital crime for dogs to chase livestock.
In some areas.
In some areas. And as I say, my information on this is a little rusty. There's quite a controversy from the member of the Doggies on Death Row in Bend several years ago. And they had been out killing sheep. And the ranchers, this is a huge economic issue in the ranching areas. So I would encourage all of the work group to include this in their scope of work, because as some of the agricultural areas get more inroads from the urban population, it's going to that type of conflict is going to come up more and more. So, okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we will have Mary Strom and Karen Harold. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here today. My name is Mary Strom, and I'm here to testify in opposition to SB 844 as it's currently written. but at the same time to express my support of its goals to reduce the number of dangerous dogs and dog-related injuries in Oregon. I'm representing a number of dog and animal organizations today. First, I am the legislative representative of the National Animal Interest Alliance, which is a broad-based national coalition of individuals, businesses, organizations, and hobbyists that responsibly utilize and enjoy their animals. Responsible Dog Breeders Association of Oregon is one of their members. I'm also an active member of a number of all breed and specialty kennel clubs, and I'm the current president of the Terrier Association of Oregon, an organization which has members who keep and cherish some of the breeds that would be negatively impacted by SB 844 as it is currently written. And we are not alone in our opposition to breed-specific legislation. Along with NAIA and Oregon Kennel Clubs, nearly all the respective national animal organizations, from the American Kennel Club to the American Veterinary Medical Association and National Animal Control Association, the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and the American Dog Owners Association, also oppose breed-specific legislation. And the reason they do is simple. Breed-specific legislation not only doesn't work, it actually complicates efforts to solve dangerous dog problems.
We have your testimony. If you could maybe just summarize it, because I think
it's
some of the same things.
Fairly short. Basically, breed-specific laws, they just don't work. I mean, I'm also a breeder of Jack Russell Terriers, which was mentioned earlier as a breed, but even a Jack Russell Terrier in the wrong hands with an owner that's irresponsible can certainly bite and attack. It can attack other dogs. It can certainly attack humans. So that's a problem. And I think basically it's unfair to thousands of responsible owners of the targeted breeds and mixes into the dogs that are treasured family pets, valued show dogs, working partners in search and rescue therapy dogs, or participants in other aspects of canine-human interaction to have these breed-specific laws. I think, as I say, if the bill is rewritten, I think, the groups that I represent would obviously are against some of the issues that are in the bill, but just, as I say, to go away from this breed-specific legislation, because I know, as one other person had commented, that it's very difficult to tell, a pit bull, when you start talking about pit bulls, what is a, pit bull and what is a boxer mix or what is another breed of dog.
But you're comfortable with the notion of going to a strict liability standard on owners who...
I think the owners should be the ones that are held responsible. I think most of the issues with these dogs that are biting, attacking are, owner-related in the fact that the dog's running loose, the dog is not properly been socialized or trained, they're getting over fences, for improper fencing issues. Most of those are go all back to the owner and not particularly to the breed.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Question.
Senator Pazansky.
I didn't hear in your testimony anything about some of the other parts of the bill. I'm wondering if you or your group has taken a position as to what it says requires county animal control agencies to establish a registry for dog breeders.
I'm not sure that is going to work. I think that's been tried in several other areas across the country. I think it's very expensive to enforce. I think your people that are going to, there are people that are still going to skirt the law no matter what. And I don't think that the penalty, as I said, I think was mentioned earlier, that the penalty for not registering is a very small one. And so for a $50 penalty, I don't think you're going to get a lot of people that are going to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next.
Hello, Madam Chairman, Senators. My name is Karen Harold, and I am here as a breeder of American Staffordshire Terriers. I strongly support dangerous dog legislation. I have been attacked personally, firsthand. When I was 5 years old, I had my lip torn apart. I still vividly remember having my face stitched back together. My sympathy absolutely goes out to those people who have been attacked far worse than I ever was. I cannot imagine the emotional scars they carry, to say nothing of the physical scars. However, I also come to represent the good side of the bull breeds. Many of you may have seen my dog in the paper last week. This is not the side of the pit bull that you routinely see. He was at Westminster Kennel Club. Picture, if you will, three adults in the back seat of a car, add a black and tan coonhound, and then add an American Staffordshire Terrier. Okay? They can be very good dogs. I'm not your stereotypical pit bull owner, and most of the people that I know are not. Many people are professionals. I have a degree in electrical engineering. I have over 20 years in the computer industry. Much of it is manager. I strongly oppose breed-specific legislation. Breed-specific legislation does not work. There are good dogs and bad dogs of every breed. And unfortunately, I do not have the attributions with my material because my computer was stolen when I was in New York getting those pictures taken. Several years ago, there was an infant that was actually killed by its family's own Pomeranian. As I was trying to prepare for this hearing, I was going through all the testimony that just happened in the province of Ontario in Canada. One of the things that they listed there was a child that was severely mauled by a Labrador Retriever. I am not here to point out bad dogs, because, there, like I said, there are good dogs and bad dogs of every breed. But it can happen with any breed of dog. And I picked those two because most people would not think there would be a particular problem with those. The dog that triggered most of the work in the province of Ontario was identified as a pit bull terrier. When some of the local breeders who are very familiar with that breed of dog went to see it, it was really a bull mastiff. Breed identification is very difficult. If any of you were following that piece of legislation, when the Attorney General was asked to identify the pit bull, he picked the wrong dog. It's still being talked about today because the animal control officers are saying, if you can't tell us what it is, how can we tell? Because you very often cannot tell what breed of dog it is. I included the URL for three quizzes you can find on the web if you would like to take a look at them. I identified the wrong dog, and I sleep with these guys. Okay. The second question I would like to ask you is, did prohibition get rid of alcohol? You will find me. You will find people like me. The dogs that are the problem are not owned by responsible citizens. They are not going to license their dogs. They are not going to register their dogs. They probably aren't even going to take them to a veterinarian for medical care. The serious fighting dogs cost way more than any of us have ever earned or have ever sold a dog for. I rather doubt if those are the dogs causing the problem. Those dogs are well hidden. The animal control people in general can tell you they are very, very hard to find. The big problem resides with people who are irresponsible. Dogs running at large. A dog that is not running at large in general is not going to hurt someone. It's not going to run out and attack a person, etc. It could still happen in their own home, but in general it won't.
So you would also be comfortable with the idea of tightening up the liability standards?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Put the responsibility where it lies, with the irresponsible owner and not the breed of dog. Okay. There is no way to identify the breeds. The U.S. Supreme Court just ruled that there is no genetic evidence to prove that the one breed is any more dangerous than another. I ran into some specific problems, and I'm not an attorney by any stretch of the imagination, but as I read through the law, I noticed a number of issues, and I listed those for you. They range from, it talks about the registry, about certified breeders. There is no such thing. The registries in question are interested in maintaining stud books, keeping the pedigree information, parenting information. They do not care about who breeds, who doesn't. I am listed as a breeder, but there is no way. All I do is go put two dogs together, and I'm suddenly a breeder. People like me do it responsibly. We spend a tremendous amount of time and effort making sure our animals have good homes, that they are never in a situation where something like these attacks would happen. On the other hand, there are a great number of people who just make puppies and give them away on the street corner. As the people from the Humane Societies can tell you, the pounds are overflowing with pit bulls. The Staffordshire Terrier Club of America, the parent club of the American Staffordshire Terrier, spends most of its rescue money finding homes for street pits. Most of the problem dogs do not belong to any registry. People find a tougher dog and they want to breed a tougher dog yet. The reason is because much of the problem we're seeing is aligned with the criminal element. Instead of carrying a gun, a number of people pack a pit bull, or in addition to a gun. I'm going a little out of order here, but
I questioned some of the things
because I think we may actually be mixing some property issues and some criminal law issues. There is no provision in the bill for due process. And the worst problem, there is no funding. Existing animal control laws would probably solve the vast majority of the problems we're seeing if they were enforced, if no dog was ever running at large. As a result of the Canadian testimony, you'll find that a great deal of work has been done. The main issues behind canine aggression are irresponsible breeding dogs to be meaner and badder, uneducated or irresponsible dog owners, poor socialization and training, poor enforcement of leash and licensing laws, and a lack of education for children. In how to proceed, I would encourage you, because it's all in a few very concise files, to read what has happened in the province of Ontario. A tremendous number of good experts on animal behavior and animal law were pulled together. The breed-specific bill passed, but the data is there, and I would think anybody who reads it would draw a very different conclusion. I have given you the URLs for that documentation. It's an excellent place to start. I would encourage you to enforce and strengthen the existing leash laws, the existing drug laws, because a lot of the pit bull problem is actually associated with the drug problem. I would encourage you to look at California and New York's dangerous dog laws. I can help you find those if you like. Calgary, Alberta has an excellent animal control law. Since they enforced that, their licensing is running at 90%. Their dog bite incidence has dropped to 70% of what it was at a time when their population has doubled. And their animal control actually operates in the black. I would encourage you to punish irresponsible dog ownership, because that's where the real problem lies. I think that probably does it for me.
Thank you very much. That was very good, and I hope you'll participate in the...
I have already given my name to Senator Deckert.
Thank you.
And I want to show you. I've got my show and tell. This is a picture from the 1940s. It's a magazine cover. It's talking about Russia. In this magazine cover, like in so many from World War I, the American Pit Bull Terrier was the symbol of the United States. It is an all-American dog. It is a wonderful dog if it's in the hands of the right people. Thank you very much.
Very much. Other questions? Thank you. Okay, we have Kent Rowader and Glenn Stonebaker, our last two. You may be on different sides of this, but go ahead and come on up.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Glenn Stolmick with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I said it would be brief. I'd like to call your attention in the bill to page 3, line 34. And in this section 6, it's talking about the dogs that are considered public nuisances. And on line 34, it says it's a dog that chases or menaces persons or chases vehicles on premises other than the person on.
Are you referring to 641 or 844?
844.
Do you have that page? Yeah, page number's wrong.
Well, I think it's the third page. 1, 2. Oh, excuse me. It's page 4.
Page 4.
Line 34. Might make a difference. Okay. The reason I call that to your attention is because, and I've spent a good part of my life as a farmer slash rancher in rural Oregon, and our dogs chased cars when they went by. And I heard an interesting TV special not too long ago in which a convicted felon talked about how easy it was to burglarize and steal things out in the country, except he said there's two things that makes him stay away from certain farm operations. One, those that had lights, and those that had dogs that chased him down the road when he was casing the place. And I don't agree that dogs should chase people or bite people when they go by. But to have dogs chase cars, in the 13 years I was in Wallowa County, we never had, as far as I could tell, one item taken, no vandalism on our farm whatsoever.
How do you train a dog to chase a car and not a bike?
Or not two.
Chair Burdick, our kids rode bicycles all the time, and the neighbor's kids rode bicycles all the time, and I understand what you're saying, because I rode bicycles in rural Oregon, too. I did not like it when a dog chased me. Mm-hmm. It did teach me to pedal pretty fast, but they didn't. They don't do the same. In fact, if a person stops their car, a dog wouldn't bite him. But the secret was that they didn't know that when they drove by. Mm-hmm. And so they left us alone. The point I'm getting at is, under this law, the way it is, that if, and this is under the current part, that if it chases a vehicle, then over here you're saying that you could have the dog sterilized. And some of these dogs, our dog we had was a fairly valuable stock dog. And it was a guard dog, but it was also a very fine stock dog. I wouldn't want this bill to, if we could, and maybe I can work through Senator Whitsitt on this, to have that provision about chasing vehicles. It still says they're a menace if they chase people. And I think if you're on a bicycle, you're still chasing a person when you're chasing a bicycle.
Why don't you keep the bikes in? Yeah, it is defined. Actually, as Senator Prasansky points out, it is defined as a vehicle in the statute, so there would have to be some specific reference to it. Because I can tell you, this Rottweiler would have bitten me had he been given the chance. Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kent Rowreeder. I'm a animal control officer, animal services officer for Washington County Animal Services. I apologize
for not calling you up earlier. I just got the wrong name there.
That's fine. I am the officer that worked on the Kathleen Immel attack. In fact, I worked on the attack, both attacks of that same dog. Without a shadow of a doubt, that young boy would be dead if Kathleen had not intervened. Period, end of sentence. Because what the dog did to Kathleen was merely try to get her out of the way so it could get back to what it wanted in the first place. I've agreed with a lot of the testimony I've heard. Pit bulls are wonderful dogs. They really are. And as far as getting a registry to work, I don't really see where it will. Because the people that are breeding the dogs that are destructive and dangerous aren't going to obey any kind of rule that you set forth. I'm working on a case right now where two pit bulls crawled inside of a fence, 6-foot wooden fence, inside of a 6-foot cyclone kennel, and shredded a dog there. It's just not going to work. We've tried breed specific in Washington County with wolf hybrids, and it didn't work. As soon as you told them certain regulations, it instantly changed from a wolf hybrid to a Malamute Husky. And then there was no regulations involved in it. Mm-hmm. So I really don't see how it would work with breed-specific and certain rules and regulations that this, you know, encompasses. As far as getting the punishment to the owner, I agree with it 100%. That's where it lies. It doesn't lie with the dog. The dog is only a product of what it lives in and what it's been allowed to do.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much for coming. Okay. Before we leave this bill, I would hope that at a minimum, I know there are a lot of issues around this bill, I would hope at a minimum that when the work group is complete, that we have clear direction on going to a strict liability standard for owners who continue to not do right by their dogs and produce bad dogs. So with that, we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 844 and open a hearing on the other one, which is
641.
Senate Bill 641. We will start out with Sharon Hammer and Randy Covey. I think you actually are together, but I think I got it right this time, maybe. Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Sharon Harmon, director of the Oregon Humane Society, and for the record, we are together, but we're not that together, okay?
So okay, I'm glad you cleared that up.
They're having rumors, just to spell them right now.
Together before.
Yeah, we've and yes, you have.
These type of hearings, I know.
We make a great team, though.
Let's see. We urge your support on Senate Bill 641. We agree that dog fighting is a serious, violent crime. The people that commit these acts, they are not people you want to have living next to you, your kids playing with. The elements of dog fighting besides animal cruelty involve gambling, involve drugs, involve weapons, involve pornography. The list goes on and on. These are seriously bad folks. Having the ability to identify specific tools of fighting dogs gives law enforcement another opportunity to bring these criminals to justice. Dog fighters are very, very secretive about when fights are held. There's a lot of money at stake. These are now felony crimes. We rarely are able to intervene in the moment that the crime is being committed, and instead we have to look for supporting evidence to back up a case. But I think there are some amendments that would improve the enforceability of this bill. Section 1, Item 2, where it talks about cat mills, this should be amended to talk about any animals used as lures or bait for pit bulls. They can use chickens, they can use puppies, they can use small dogs in this equipment. Give us the broadest ability to enforce the bill by changing it to any animal. Item number 4, dogfighting paraphernalia. I think if you walk in the Pearl District on any Sunday afternoon, you're going to see some dogs with 2-inch wide collars. These are fashionable. And I'm worried that if you have a 2-inch wide collar as evidence of dogfighting, that perhaps we should have some severability to the items of what is equipment, or eliminate the 2-inch wide, or link it to another piece of equipment. And the last point I would like to make for amendment is item number 6, a fighting pit. Fighting pit is simply a term of art. It does not indicate an excavated area. We know that fighting pits can be horse stalls, they can be walled off areas, and in a recent case, they can be in the attic of a house in Lake Oswego. Nothing excavated there, but just walled in a confined area. So eliminating the term excavation in such a walled-in area would suffice, I believe, though Lieutenant Covey may have some other input on that. Overall, we really appreciate Senator Deckett for bringing this bill to the front, and we would like to urge your support and passage of Senate Bill 641. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's not very often that I get the last word after Ms. Harmon, so that's why I encourage her to go first today. Thank you for your time today, and I want to thank Senator Deckard for bringing this issue to the forefront. I had the pleasure or displeasure, as it may be, to work on the Woods case, and I appreciate you understanding that because it is still an open case, we still have one individual that's being prosecuted. I'm not at liberty to discuss the details of that, but I am here to tell you that this bill, with certain clarifications, will help in the prosecution of dogfighting crimes. I'm not going to elaborate or repeat what Ms. Harmon has already so eloquently clarified and stated as some issues, but it is a good bill. It will help. As part probably one of the few people that gets to deal with dog fighting on a regular basis, at least allegations of dog fighting. I'm happy to see that this bill is being presented. I shared with members of the committee, I think they were distributed, the Humane Law Book. And if you look, as you get time, on page 27 in that book is where the current dog fighting bill or current dog fighting law is listed. And so I think if you get a chance to look at that, you'll be able to see how this would help to clarify current dogfighting law and make it easier not only to prosecute people that are involved with dogfighting, but it'll make it easier for law enforcement officers, whether it be somebody like myself that specializes in animal crimes or what I like to call the more traditional law enforcement officers. They'll be able to see evidence of dogfighting, and that will help them get a search warrant that then they will be able to go in and find further evidence or maybe even in some cases find people in the act of dogfighting. So strongly support this bill, and it will make my job easier in terms of prosecuting these crimes.
Thank you very much. Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Burdick, for either one of you, on 915 it describes unprescribed veterinary medicine as dogfighting paraphernalia. That's an untenable comment.
That's one of the issues that would need some clarification. Although I'm commissioned and serve at the pleasure of the governor, I have offered my assistance to Senator Deckard in trying to work out some of the details of this. What this refers to is that it's common when you're dealing with dog fighting crimes to have the dog fighters, the people that are putting the dogs in, so to have different types of medications to try to treat their dogs after the fight. They don't go to a veterinarian because they're concerned about being discovered or raising suspicion. And so they will get medications maybe for other dogs that have been prescribed to other dogs and use it to treat the dogs that are being injured during the fight. So that's a reference to that as evidence of dog fighting.
I understand the purpose of the inclusion, but it is way too broad, and it could, you know, unprescribed veterinary medicine could be a dog flea collar. It could also be most ranches and farms and so forth have all sorts of unprescribed veterinary medicine, which are certainly not dog fighting paraphernalia. So that really needs to be cleaned up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Whitsitt, thank you for clarifying your question and your comment. You are exactly right that is an area that needs to be clarified. And there actually is a list of common medications that can be found when you're looking into dog fighting allegations. And so it would be easy to add those to this.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Can I follow up with that?
Please do.
I think that probably an improvement on this bill is to link these items together. We find them concurrently. You know, and using the 2-inch wide collar, you know, you find the wide collars, you find that heavy change to build up the dog's neck so he can fight harder. You find a lot of these items in common. And if there's a way that we can link them in a way that doesn't say it needs a breaking stick and medications that are not prescribed, or so that we have the ability to have 3 out of 5 or 2 out of 7 or however it works out, they are common elements of dog fighting.
I'm going to let counsel comment in a second because he has some insight on this, but one of the things he brought up is that this does establish intent. I mean, it has intent as a qualification. So if you just wander in and you see one of these things and there's no other reason to believe that there's dog fighting going on, that there has to be an element of intent. And counsel, did you want to elaborate on that?
I just pointed out, thank you, Senator Burdick, I just pointed out Section 3 of the bill, which begins on line 25, so as to point out that it is not enough merely to possess any of the implements that are listed under the definition of dogfighting paraphernalia. It's also, in order to prosecute and convict the individual, the possession of those implements have got to be linked to the intent that those implements are used to train a dog as a fighting dog or be used in furtherance of a dog fight. And the second point, if I could make Senator Burdick, follows up, Ms. Harmon, on the point you just made, which was a suggestion that the work group could look at the commercial drug offense statute as analogous, which does list, as you were just suggesting, various component material, the possession of any number of which, more than one of which or more than two of which qualifies that particular offense as a commercial drug offense, and you could do something analogous with this statute so as to protect someone who may just have one or two of these things. But regardless of that, the intent still needs to be proved.
But I agree with Senator Whitsitt as well that the unprescribed things need to be, you need to focus in on the ones that you're actually finding rather than dragging in flea collars, which I would be a subject to prosecution under that standard. Are there other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, now we'll take Mike Oswald, Marcia Keith, and Dave Paul. Welcome again.
I don't care. I remember.
Okay, I'll start. It'll be me. My name is Marcia Keith, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association to offer support of Senate Bill 641. Shortly before I came to this hearing, Oregon Veterinary Medical Association Executive Director and I also spotted the unprescribed veterinary medicine designation in line 15, and that did not make it into the testimony that is now being handed out to you, but we would like to express the same concerns and reservations about that phrase. Given that, I would just like to make a brief statement saying that the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association has a long-held position against dogfighting and believes that this bill will better enable the law enforcement community to go after those people who engage in this reprehensible activity. And what this bill does, it's patterned after the cockfighting paraphernalia bill from last year. And we were involved a lot in getting that one passed, and we would love to see dogfighting paraphernalia be in the same category.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, committee members. My name is Dave Paul. I'm a senior deputy DA with the Clackamas County DA's office. And today I'm actually wearing two hats. I'm here to represent the Oregon District Attorneys Association, who heartily endorses and supports Senate Bill 641. I also happen to be employed at the office that prosecuted the Woods case that was mentioned by Lieutenant Covey earlier. The Oregon DA's Association supports this bill because it does provide us an additional tool in our efforts to fight this form of crime. As a prior speaker has noted, it gives us that piece that currently we find in the cockfighting statute dealing with the paraphernalia that's associated with the dogfighting itself. I had an opportunity to review the search warrant affidavit in the Woods case, and I can note for your information that had we had this particular law on the books, we would have been able to prosecute that particular crime. The DA's Association supports the bill as written because it does require a specific intent. I know there were some questions earlier about the fact that some of these items might be common items, and you would be potentially prosecuting people just for possessing those. As Mr. O'Leary, committee counsel, pointed out, it does require a specific intent, which we see as a saving item for this particular bill. In addition, we would urge that the committee not make this linkage for all of these items. Because we have the specific intent element, it's our belief that that saves the particular bill and makes it constitutional. I would note further that when we talk about specific intent and these items that are possessed,
we're going to have to prove intent by either direct or circumstantial evidence. We're either going to have somebody who's going to admit to possessing these items for dogfighting, or have an eyewitness to that event, or we will prove it by circumstantial evidence, DNA evidence. We'll have hair. We'll have dog blood. We'll have the evidence that we need to prove the intent element. So again, we applaud Senator Deckert for recognizing that we need this as an effective tool to fight this crime. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Welcome again. And I'd like to ask you to keep it short because we're getting a little tight on time here.
My pleasure. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, Mike Oswald again from Multnomah County. I, again, want to just voice my support for the intentions to reduce dogfighting in Oregon. My only additional comment to add to this, which is there's already been very good comments added, was to, if in fact there's going to be a work group to include the prosecutors association in that work group. There have been successful dogfighting prosecutions in the state, and I think that getting prosecutors involved in what's necessary to build a strong case they can be successful with is going to be critical here. And any language that helps clearly define what evidence might look like is going to contribute to that. So I'm very pleased to see that the District Attorney's Association is represented here, and I would encourage the committee to ensure that they're represented on any work group that's involved.
Thank you. That would be a very positive addition, especially with your recent experience, unfortunate experience. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Thank you. Karen Harold has signed up. I'd like you to be ultra brief.
Yes or no?
Thank you. Yes or no?
Okay, once again, my name is Karen Harold. I strongly support giving the prosecutors more way to get at dogfighting. I absolutely abhor dogfighting. However, I do have some concerns here, and I realize there is the statement about intent. However, many people with the bull breeds, in fact, many breeders in general, if one has multiple dogs in a household, a breaking stick is actually a very wonderful thing to happen, because so that not a lot of damage happens, and if an accidental fight happens, you want to break it up as fast as possible, and a breaking stick is a very humane way to get two dogs apart. As was mentioned earlier, wide collars are often a fashion statement. Many people with the bull and terrier breeds do use spring poles, flirt sticks, whatever you want to call them. So I think it needs to be made very clear that not just having the breed of dog and some of these items is enough to be accused of being a dog fighter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for keeping it brief. Okay, well, we will, I think you've got a lot of grist for your little mill, for your little work sessions on both these bills, Senator Decker, and I appreciate you sticking with it to hear the testimony. And we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 641.
Madam Chair, I think it's actually the assistant that stuck with it the whole time. I think the good senator left our presence.
Senator Prusansky, we are always supposed to make our colleagues look good.
Oh, okay. I forgot. I'm sorry. I thought it was always take care of the staff because they
and
the ones
that
take care of
it. And in this case, it's well-deserved. So thank you again, Senator Decker, and Susie for your help. Okay. Okay, now we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 246. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 246 would amend the current statute that requires reporting by veterinarians of suspected malicious killing or torture of animals to law enforcement, and it would extend that requirement to any public or private official.
Okay, I'm going to ask Lieutenant Randy Covey, Kelly Peterson, and Kevin Neely all to come up at once.
Chair Burdick? Question.
Senator Whitson.
I wonder if we could get our counsel to better define malicious and what's the other term? Maliciously killing an animal. What does that fall into? I mean, from a cow's point of view, she's maliciously killed if you plan to eat her. You know, so.
Senator Whitsitt, Madam Chair,
please.
Thank you. If you'll give me a moment, I have the statutes listed. The the statute cross-referenced in this bill and the current applicability to veterinarians is 167.322, which is aggravated animal abuse in the first degree. And that is the statute from which the phrase maliciously kill an animal comes in. And that statute defines the term maliciously to mean intentionally acting with a depravity of mind and reckless and wanted disregard of life. Torture, meanwhile, is defined as action taken for the primary purpose of inflicting pain. There are exemptions from those definitions that are listed later in the chapter, 167.335. And those exemptions, so this is aggravated animal abuse, does not, it is not aggravated animal abuse if, as regards to the treatment of livestock being transported by an owner or common carrier, two, an animal involved in a rodeo or similar exhibition, three, commercially grown poultry, four, animals subject to good animal husbandry practices, and that's separately defined, five, the killing of livestock, in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 603. Six, animals subjected to good veterinary practices as described in Chapter 686. Seven, lawful fishing, hunting, and trapping activities. Eight, wildlife management practices under color of law. Nine, lawful scientific or agricultural research. And 10, reasonable activities taken in connection with the control of vermin or pests. And 11, reasonable handling and training techniques. So all of those specific provisions do not count, if you will, under the definition of aggravated animal abuse in the first degree or maliciously killing an animal, and therefore do not count for purposes of the reporting requirement.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you for clearing that up. I appreciate it. Welcome to the committee. Maybe we'll start with you this time. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we actually took a quick poll here, and I get to go first. I was told I was going to go first, so I take that opportunity. I see Senator Beyer and Senator Whitson.
You identify yourself with again.
I'm Lieutenant Randy Covey. I'm with the Law Enforcement Division of the Oregon Humane Society. Senator Beyer and Senator Whitson are both making use of the book that I shared earlier, and if you look on page 21, you will see a list of the exemptions, as counsel was pointing out. I will caution you, though, this is the 2002 edition, and there have been some changes to the law that aren't included in this, so don't rely on it too heavily. But in this case, it is accurate as far as the aggravated animal abuse and some of the exemptions. I am here in support of Senate Bill 246, Mandatory Reporting of Aggravated Animal Abuse, because in my experience and in my training in viewing situations that involve animal abuse, it is and has been a precursor crime to human abuse. And for that primary reason, it's important to identify people that participated in animal abuse and provide some intervention if that, and in some many cases that means prosecution, to prevent that type of behavior from escalating and being used against human victims. So that's my testimony. I'm going to keep it short. I am in support of this, and any time we can report, again, aggravated animal abuse, which is the most severe type of abuse. I think it's important to do that.
Thank you. And I assume that when you say it's a precursor to abuse of humans, it sometimes occurs at the same time. I mean, both kinds of abuse in a home, for example.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. It does sometimes occur at the same time. Sometimes it occurs first, and if it's left unchecked, it escalates. There are many different ways. And I would also add, just for clarification, just because somebody commits animal abuse doesn't mean that they're automatically going to go on to commit human abuse, but it has been identified as a warning signal that that's a distinct possibility.
Thank you. Senator Starr, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. I've listened to the list here, and in the communities where I've lived and grown up, owners of pets very frequently, for one reason or another, put them down. There's no exclusion in this for that to happen. We had an old dog that developed cancer, very old, and my father put him down and buried him. How do you deal with situations like that that are not exempt under the definitions here?
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, I appreciate the question. I think it really relates back to the method that's used for euthanasia. There are ways that are considered humane methods, and there are ways that are considered abusive. I can't imagine that there would be any situation that I've run across. In fact, the situation that I've run across where people have euthanized their own pets, and especially in rural areas where it's common practice, let's just cut to the chase, where people shoot their animals. We're not talking about that as aggravated animal abuse in this situation. I did prosecute a person who shot their dog, but the manner in which he shot it was that he came home, was upset that the dog was chewing on his hot tub cover, went to his house, got a 9mm handgun, and while the dog was running loose on his property, shot it several times before killing it. That's the type of animal abuse that we would prosecute, not the type that's intended to end result in a humane death of an animal, because that's the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, I'd like to. I know I'm unfortunately have to leave. I got another committee I'm going to take care of or get ready for. But before I leave, I do want to put on the record. I'd like to have the panel give us the nexus as to the list that we're looking at expanding to. I understand from my background, my liberal arts background in sociology, that the first child abuse cases were actually prosecuted under animal abuse cases out of New York. So I understand the nexus, but when I look at the list, and I'm just wondering if there was any discussion, because there's certain people here that I think you're looking at potentially violating or taking away certain privileges that are there right now. And so I think there's I don't know if that discussion has occurred, but if you got physicians on the list, that means that they breached their confidentiality with their patient in that setting. I just want to have some stuff on the record as to how this evolved and why we chose to take what I call the catch-all of what's in the bill that says public or private official, as compared to looking at what's on the list and seeing who might be the more in tune to actually being exposed to this type of animal abuse. Because, I mean, I'm trying to think of where was, as a chiropractor, going to come into that context. And then as Senator Burdick would say, out on your bicycle, and you see something happening that could be a discipline to a dog, do I have to stop and observe and watch to see if it reaches the point of being aggravated animal abuse? Do I have a duty to stop and go back to report to law enforcement because I'm an attorney, because I'm a lawmaker? That's the type of things that I'm having a little hard time grappling with as to some of these others, such as peace officers, firefighters, ones that you know that potentially are going to be in these settings, even CSD workers, where they would be in the house and actually have more direct opportunity to be exposed to those situations as compared to just taking a catch-all list and say, we're going to have this for everyone.
Yeah. That's a good point. Do you have comments on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Przanski, and I want to be sensitive to your time constraints. I actually did have a conversation with somebody from Health and Human Services who had the same concerns regarding confidentiality. And part of our conversation dealt with the fact that it is limited to aggravated animal abuse, which is it's not, luckily, a very common crime, so it'll be very... not very often that this type of issue comes up, but it is a concern, and it is something that I think should be taken a look at.
Thank you. I think Senator Przanski's point, if I can paraphrase you, is that the list is so comprehensive, and maybe it might make more sense to narrow it down to people like teachers or somebody who might be closer to the nexus of where the problem is.
And I think the other part is that I, as a prosecutor, understand, or I believe I understand, what aggravated animal abuse is. And I'm not saying ignorance should be a defense, but the reality, we're putting a charge on a number of people in society to basically make those distinctions. Is it, you know, a class A, you know, or a, well, is it aggravated or is it just normal? I mean,
yeah.
Not to say either is right, but just trying to require that type of a determination.
Right. And I think this bill actually came out of my reading of a publication by the American Prosecutors Research Institute, which had a piece in their newsletter about how children sometimes are able to disclose that their animal is being abused when they in fact are also being abused, and they're not able to talk about their own abuse, but they are able to talk about the animal's abuse. So that was where the idea came from, and I just basically threw it out there to see if to see what kind of reaction we got from people, and to solicit questions just like yours as to how we can perhaps facilitate both animal abuse control but also child abuse, which was the original motivation for this.
Madam Chair, I do want to be on the record. I do support this concept. I just think that it, in its current form, we may be opening up a can of worms that may not really give us what we're really intending to accomplish, and put a lot of people in fear that they're in violation of the law if they don't take steps whenever they see anything that may never result to that level. Which,
thank you. And one possible thing to look at would be to limit it to disclosures from children themselves or whatever, I mean, to narrow it down. So we will think about all that. And you can be excused, Senator Prusansky, and I will be
thank
along
you.
Shortly. We all go to his committee next. Okay. We may be just a couple minutes late.
That's
Senator
fine.
Prusansky. Okay, Kelly, did you want to go next?
Yeah. Chair Burdick and committee members, I'm Kelly Peterson with the Humane Society of the United States. And again, we're here to offer testimony in support of Senate Bill 246. And I'll just keep it brief. I did provide to you some materials that talk about our First Light campaign, which talks about the link between animal abuse and human violence, if it can be an early indicator, and also some statistics on violence, and really just a rough comparison of what we've been able to put together for cross-reporting and semi-cross-reporting across along state agencies. And so it's kind of a working process, and I'm still researching some of the other states. And what it is it's become quickly a trend. I think last session there were about six states that introduced cross-reporting type bills, and really it's just one more strategy in intervening early before a more serious violence occurs within the family. So with that, again, thank you for introducing the bill, and
thank you.
I'm very happy about it and supporting it. So thank you.
Appreciate that. Mr. Neely, you've waited a long time
thank
for this
you,
moment. Mr. Neely.
For the record, Kevin Neely, Executive Assistant to Attorney General Hardy Myers. I'm here to report the Attorney General supports Senate Bill 246. He believes that aggravated animal abuse is, in fact, an effective predictor of future violent behavior. Obviously, we believe that for the purposes of law enforcement, it is absolutely critical that we identify potential future offenders as early as possible and try to find ways to intervene and hopefully prevent very, very serious person crimes that often occur later. I also provided you with some additional facts from an organization called American Humane. I also am grateful for Dave Paul for getting this stuff for me. And I think that in that information, you'll see the very significant nexus between violence against, particularly this sort of dramatic violence against animals, and future violence against humans. And it's very critical that we can find a way to intervene as early as possible, as I said, and try and prevent that from happening in the future. Again, I thank the Chair for introducing the bill. We'll be supporting it.
Thank you very much. There aren't very many people left to ask questions, but Senator Byer, do you have any questions? Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry we
thank
had
you.
To squeeze you in at the end here. We will now close the hearing on Senate Bill 246, and we will adjourn the Senate Judiciary Committee.